TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, and Dane, right off the top of the show, we have some NBA news that does affect the Timberwolves. A Wolves legend is calling it a career. Luol Deng has signed a one-day contract with the Chicago Bulls and called it a career, man.
Don't say that in a negative way.
I'm not.
Lou was good. He was good. I'm trying to look up right now.
Those last 22 year, games, man.
I know. He had like a net rating of plus 10. I wonder what... when the last time any player on the Timberwolves had a plus 10 or better net rating? Like, I bet you it goes back to like KG or something.
That's a really good question.
Right? Because it's got to like, be a long like Jimmy, time. In that 2017-18 playoff season, nobody got up, I would assume, individually over 10. Or there's probably somebody like weird out there, but Lou, moral of the story.
Well, I mean, you'll have to like cap it at a certain number of minutes, like
right
in 100 minutes or more, or whatever, just because you
was
might
it
sign
22. Are you thinking of the Covington played?
He might have played more than that because of the garbage time games that he played at the beginning of the season. But I think that the stretch of games where he played,
oh no, it is 22. You're right.
Was like that once Tibbs got fired. That was that stretch of games where he was actually pretty good for them.
I remember that first game where I don't know, people were in foul trouble or something, and Andy Greer, the Wolves assistant, was like pointed to Lou on the bench, and Ryan was like, yeah, Lou, get in there. He was awesome.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah, he was great.
I remember who they were playing. It was one of those lime green nights. I have that vision in my head of I was like, because Luol Deng like sits right in front of me at the game, or the last person on whoever the bench is.
Yeah.
It's like right in front of me.
And not Luol like, Deng anymore.
No, it's they stood up like the whole preseason game. I don't even they have a million guys on the bench.
Well, right yeah, now. It's don't count on where anyone sits on the bench during preseason games, Dana. We have learned, I think, so far, not a lot about this team, but you can't count on bench position.
That's actually like a low-key interesting question of who's going to get the 15th spot.
Yeah.
Because Tyrone Wallace is non-guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of makes 16. Yeah. And obviously you got the two-way guys. And like
which they don't Herbs. Count, yeah.
They don't count. But like Ty Wallace has been playing for this team. And you, so he would, because it's not guaranteed, would kind of be your natural
that's what you would
that
think,
he's not
yeah.
going to make it. But, like, I don't know, man. I'm Keita. Like, Keita Bates-Diop. I would not be shocked. This is totally my opinion.
Sure.
I would be shocked if it – I wouldn't be shocked if it was Keita who ends up getting
that's cut. Interesting because that's something I – quite frankly, I really haven't thought about. Like, I had just kind of been under the assumption that – Wallace is going to be gone because his contract isn't guaranteed. And Keita's is for this year and then next year it's non-guaranteed. Year it's non-guaranteed. And it's not some huge guarantee either way, but it's just that was my assumption.
They could afford it. It won't go into the tax or anything like that. It won't make a huge, huge difference. It's just I understand that Tyrone Wallace was this free look, non-guaranteed contract, pick him up off of waivers. But you wouldn't do that unless you thought there was some guys he could legitimately compete with for that last roster spot or one of the last roster spots. So, I mean, probably more still the safest bet is Wallace ends up getting cut.
Well, and that move was made when they were under the assumption Naz Reid was going to be a two-way guy. That's another roster
that's
spot.
True.
That move was made before they had agreed to terms with Jalen Noel. Mm-hmm. That's two roster spots right there that are guaranteed guys that at that time you didn't know if they were going to be. Mm-hmm. So that's something else that has to go into that thinking. So I don't know. It's a good question. It's not one that I've really pondered. I've just been under the assumption that he's going to be the guy gone because of his contract situation.
Right. I mean, and it's not a huge question. I think it would be kind of jarring to people if all of a sudden on Monday or Tuesday or whatever, you just get the final roster. And Keita wasn't on it because he was a good second-round pick last year. Mm-hmm. I think people are somewhat enticed by him. It's just by proximity or in his like the nature of the situation, someone could get cut. And someone's going to get cut, and you know, you just kind of go down, and it could be him.
Well, do you think that – here's where it's going to
– I'd cut Wallace, for the record.
I would, too, because I think Keita has more trade value. If you want to move a piece, his contract's going to have a little more trade value. And I think that he's a player that if – again, for somebody could be a free look as a trade piece, he's someone that's worth taking a flyer on. He showed, I think, that he can play at the NBA level at least a little bit. I mean,
yeah, like
he's
I'd
not
love
going
to see
to
him on like a Charlotte or something,
sure.
Right?
He's
or you're
not
like
gonna,
the ninth, eighth man or something.
Yeah, he's not going to ever be an all-star, I don't think, but he's a guy that's serviceable in the league.
Man, so, but Wallace, though, Wallace is restricted next year, too, if they do guarantee him. I don't know. It's an interesting question. This is not the most important question. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, this is not what we had planned on doing in the...
Lou Alding threw us off.
Yeah, thanks, Lou. Appreciate that. But there's some news in the NBA today. Bradley Beal agreed to a 2-year contract extension with the Washington Wizards, which kills a lot of people's dreams, at least temporarily, of the Wolves trading for him, because if they signed him to an extension, they're certainly not trading him this year.
Well, they can't for 6 months. So it's after the trade deadline. He's literally trade ineligible. As I understand it right now, he's trade ineligible until the summer, basically.
Yeah, so sorry, everyone that wanted that to happen. That won't happen until at least next year, if ever. But the Buddy Hield news in Sacramento, I think, is interesting. Jaylen Brown is another name who is extension eligible in Boston that has not agreed to an extension. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on whether or not you think either of those guys could be a piece for Minnesota that's worth exploring. Because I think if we've learned anything about this regime, this new front office, is they're going to call around about every situation that's
available.
Right,
that's what I was going
to say. So whether it's them receiving calls or them making calls, they're going to listen to just about anything that anyone has to say and then make their decision from there. So I'm just curious what you think their interest level should be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to think there's a whiteboard or Google document chalked up somewhere in that front office.
I guess a Google document these days. But
maybe. I don't know. Roses has that big, like, I mean, it looks like a fantasy football draft board, like, in his office.
He still has a BlackBerry.
Yes,
so
true.
That's
true.
Yeah, there's a whiteboard for sure. He still has a BlackBerry.
I mean, whiteboard, whatever. I think it's, if your goal is to be adding a dynamic 1B or 2 next to Carl, then any time, particularly a wing who has showcased something thus far in his career, is of interest, and particularly when they're younger, coming off of a rookie contract. I mean, now we know Buddy Hield's a little bit older, but like, their young guys' age curve fits with Carl. You would need, if you are somewhat desperately seeking to find that guy, you have to consider them. I mean, I don't really see it happening. You and I were talking about this a little bit before. I just think the guy they're trying to target is more of an independent creator themselves,
sure.
I think is the ideal archetype of the guy they're looking for. Bradley Beal, I mean, is a heck of a shooter, of course, but
he's a heck of a everything.
Right. Well, what do you mean by he's a heck of an everything?
He can do a lot for you offensively. I think.
But you know what I'm talking about, like that pick and roll initiator.
Sure. Well,
that's him.
I think it can be him. I would trust him to do that more than I would trust Buddy Hield to do that.
Oh, Brown. I thought that's what you were saying is Hield is the pick and roll initiator.
No.
Okay,
no.
We agree.
No.
We agree.
No.
What were you talking about?
I was Bradley Beal.
Oh, Beal. Okay.
That's who you said.
Okay, I'm mixing my words up.
Yeah, you said Bradley Beal, and that's why I was like, I think you can do that.
Buddy Hield, Bradley Beal. Buddy Hield, I don't think, fits that archetype. Bradley Beal, of course, does.
Sure.
And, you know, as does D'Angelo Russell, those type of guys. So that's what my assumption would be of what they want in their dream scenario. And I just don't think if you did go out and get Buddy Hield, you kind of give up to some extent on that dream scenario, because now you're paying him $20, $25 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
You're clogged. Like,
yeah.
It would be very difficult to be able to go get the next D'Angelo Russell or Bradley Beal if you did that. That said, man, a shooter, like a legit shooter in this system.
Oh, it is. And having someone that's almost a 42% career three-point shooter in your system would be very enticing.
So I was thinking about this last year when I was just like doing something, I was picking my Western Conference All-Stars.
Uh-huh.
And I remember this, Hield, I think, was shooting 47% from three on like high volume at the All-Star break. And I was like, okay, what does Buddy Hield need to do to be an All-Star? If you're not doing that, like, I mean, I'm sure he's taken like 8-9 attempts a game from three or something.
He finished with 7.9 attempts from three for the entire season. I don't have his pre-All-Star break numbers, but I would have to imagine it's pretty on par with that.
So honestly, like, what more does Buddy Hield need to do than that to be an All-Star in the West? Like, what is the three-point percentage? It's honestly, that's the question. 55? Does he need to make 55% of his threes?
He finished at 42.7% last year from three, which is ridiculous. He was
right.
He finished with, I believe, the third most three-pointers made in the NBA behind Steph and James Harden, who, if you're going to be behind two guys there, that's not bad company to be in. So it's really enticing to think about what he would look like alongside Carl. Now, he's not that pick and roll initiator that might make sense too, but the fact that he can score in a couple different ways and he can shoot from the place where you have next to no shooting right now. That's really interesting to me.
Are you still in the next to no shooting bin? Has anything changed in your opinion in the preseason?
Not a whole ton. Jarrett Culver, as we've talked about, necessarily not on a podcast, he has a hitch in his shot right now, and it's something. I think it's gotten a little bit better from watching him in college, but it still exists. So
I think it's hitchier now than it was in college.
I think it looks a little bit better. I think that
to me, what I'm seeing is from further distance. The further distance is creating, it is forcing the need for him to add to the shot, which makes sense, right?
You're shooting it
from further. So it really just stuck out to me. I think it was last Saturday when we were at practice. I watched him take like 33s, and he's running around, so he's catching him off on the move. Like, it's different when he's on the move versus when he's catching and shooting.
It stuck out to me. There was a corner three against the
which we were trying
Haifa
to cut video from. Yeah, there's no video on the internet of the Timberwolves. It's ridiculous.
I am so frustrated with NBA.com. I'm so frustrated with NBA.com right now. Yeah. But there was a corner three that I noticed there where I had a perfect view of it from where I was sitting in the media section. I'm sure you did too. And there's just that hitch at the top of his shot that once you see it once, you're going to continue to see it until it's there. Yeah. And if you don't look closely, you might not even notice it. If you're not like really examining his shot, you might not.
Well, and we're not even condemning him here. We're just
I'm just stating
that this
that
is
exists.
There now. It was, I remember this very clearly in Tyus's first year. That was absolutely a thing. Mm-hmm. And it went away over time. I mean, Tyus didn't become some awesome 3-point shooter, but the shot itself became smoother, and I think that's just a product of more and more reps, specifically game reps from the NBA line. I think you're able. It's something you can polish over.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm not writing off him as a shooter by any stretch of the imagination. I think that this might be a little bit of a. It's going to show us what he might be early on as a shooter. Like, I would temper your expectations on him from the outside, despite the game. I think against
over Golden, under 33%.
I'm right about there. Yeah. That's right about where I'm at. Like, I wouldn't take into the – when he went 4 of 8, I think it was against Golden State. I wouldn't expect that often.
Yeah, I'm not taking any stats, like production stats from the preseason to mean much. I'm more looking at shot selection, like Cat having shot 25 of his 47 threes from beyond the line. That means so much more to me than – if you were to have shot 60% on those or 15% on those, the fact that more than half of them have been threes suggests a massive shift in the way he's going to be used.
Like, the only really stat I'm super interested in is pace from the preseason, because I think that will translate. It won't be quite as high in the regular season, I don't think, but I think it will translate.
So to overreact preseason or to be reactive, I probably came into the Indiana game thinking, and I think I said this, I was like, this team might actually lead the league in pace or be like top three.
I still feel like that after the Indiana game.
See, I think what happened is they're going to be, their pace is going to be somewhat reactive to an opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And a team like Indiana, as we know, they want to slog you a little bit more.
Yeah.
If a team is doing that, if you try and outrun them, you could do yourself a disservice.
Sure.
In that sort of way. And I think the Wolves slowed down a lot in that game, partially due to the fact they're playing Indiana, who wants to play at that slower pace. And then also, the starters or the rotation guys played a lot more in that game.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna put as much weight into that, the actual rotation, and that game feeling a lot slower to me than I will necessarily a stat that includes a game against Israel.
I do think including the game against a non-NBA team is what skews everything really for me, because, of course, they should look really, really good. I mean, that team scored 4 points in a quarter against Portland. They're not good.
Well, I didn't know that.
I was trying to find box scores yesterday because, again, NBA.com is not working. And I was scrolling back through, like, the regular NBA site, not the advanced stats that you and I use, but the regular NBA.com, and it showed the box score, and like they scored 4 points in a fourth quarter against Portland. I'm like, oh my goodness. And I hadn't watched any of their games prior to the Wolves because it's a preseason game, and they are a team that I'm never going to watch again. Sorry, Norris Cole and Brandon Rush, but that's just the case. But I do think that having the pace number that high is a little encouraging because some of the younger guys, I don't necessarily know that they want to be able to play as fast or can play quite as fast yet. I know it's a new system for everybody, but when it's for a lot of these guys like Naz Reid or Jalen Noel, their first time on the floor, it's going to be a little bit slower just because you're going to be a little timid at times, I would think, too.
Yeah, but that's not what happened in the preseason. They just kind of like jumped into like blitzkrieg.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. It's just, it was so jarring, the pace.
Oh,
particularly in the Phoenix and Golden State game.
The Golden State game more so for me than the Phoenix game, I think.
That's what I'm saying, opponent reactive, because Golden State's like, all right, you want to play fast?
Yeah.
Try and keep up with us. Like, mm-hmm. we're gonna outpace your pace. Like,
yeah.
So it will be opponent dependent. And so that's why it's kind of like we're really starting to line up these factors of the game when they're playing a bigger, slower opponent versus a faster, quicker opponent that's going to want to play with pace. Like, I think we might have really polarizing type of games where, because I think when they're going to play those bigger teams, like we've talked about, like, I think you're going to need to play Vonleh and Gorgui together, or at least Vonleh and Bell, or something like that, to be bigger and inherently a little bit slower. So that'd be, you maybe play Miami or you play Philadelphia early on, and those games take on one sort of pace, one sort of style. And then you're going up against Brooklyn and Charlotte the first couple games. Maybe that's
faster,
difference, and you just kind of let it.
I mean, I still think that they're going to be a top three team in pace. And this is a franchise that has had...
I don't disagree with you. That's just top three is... That's fast.
I think that's what they're going to be. And Ryan even said before the game at home against the team from Israel that they're going to prioritize the system over maybe the pieces that don't all fit perfectly right now, that they're going to build this system into what they want it to be, because at some point they're going to have those pieces.
It's just a question of how good of an idea is that. There's an opportunity cost to that.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it. And I'm not saying it's a negative opportunity cost. Like, it's just, if they play faster, they're going to play worse on defense. I feel confident in being able to say that.
I completely agree.
Particularly in transition defense, and particularly when they're like...
I think even if they play slow, they're not going to play good on defense.
I think they'll play better.
I don't think this is going to be a good defensive team.
No, I think it'll be markedly better in those situations. Like, again, Indiana game, way better.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we're like, all right, now we're in the half court. And to me... I know Robert Covington is this whole modern NBA player, whatever, 3-and-D, all that. As a defender, he is such a talented half-court defender as far as vision and instincts go. You mitigate some of that when you're just playing, when you're just electrocuting the game. And
well, I think when you think of typical 3-and-D defender, that's what you think of. You know, I don't necessarily ever think of, oh, he's a great transition defender, he's a 3-and-D guy. I think of someone that gets it done in the half-court like Robert does.
If he's your best defender, like, I don't know, it makes a difference. And I think Cat will is a better defender in that way as well. Like,
agree.
I don't know if anybody's a better defender when you're going that fast. And I don't know. It's just, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be an opportunity cost that we're going to have to factor into all of this. Of like, even ignore the defense. Like, sure, it seems great. Now we got Cat up there, and you're doing this fast pace where you're bombing threes. But what's the opportunity cost of giving up the Cat post-ups?
Yeah.
Like, it's probably a good thing, but we don't know. If Cat is now asked to be shooting 10 threes a game versus the, what did he shoot last year? 5, 4, something like that?
I think it was 4 points something.
Okay, so if you boost that up to 9 for Cat, and 2 of those a game are step backs, something like that, now he's not going to be able to stay on that volume at 40%.
It was 4.6 threes attempted per games last year for Carl.
So double it to nine.
Oof, that's a lot.
Well, I'm just saying, in this hypothetical, say you double it to 9, his three-point efficiency drops, right?
I would think so a little bit.
And you're almost never getting fouled on a 3, right? So then, you know, you got to then start to say, how valuable is that versus a post-up situation where we know he's just maybe the strongest post-up player there is in the game.
Yeah.
And you can get fouls there too. Like, there needs to be a balance there. And if not, there's a cost. And that's we don't know what that cost is, but it's there.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to find out what that cost is. At some point, we're going to learn about it. And this team's going to have, I think, interesting decisions to make as far as it goes, style versus the personnel that fits it. Because say they get off to a rough start. Say they're 3-6 or 3-7. Do they panic? Do they want to change things, or are they going to stick with it? That's a question.
At least what they're saying is...
They're saying they're going to stick with it, but when the rubber meets the road, that might not always be the case.
Right. I think it makes sense to use this and to use Cat up at the top in that sort of way. And we've even seen in the Indiana game, we saw Cat get a couple more post touches.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you see Teague enter it to him in the post. And then Teague's man is going to come down and kind of chip at Cat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so now you have – it's not quite a double team. You have like
it's
one and a half.
It's a fake double. Yeah, it's that fake double.
And then you have the other guy on the weak side coming from the baseline, and he's half there. So if Cat spins baseline, now you have an actual double-double.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Houston did to him the whole time in the playoff series. It's been the most classic double he's had. So if you have three defenders somewhat detailed to him, the post-up's going to be tough. Like, he's going to have to execute that perfectly. And he's going to need to be able to hit skip passes and kickouts to guys for threes. And if we're wondering, is Jarrett Culver a 33% three-point shooter? Is Jake Lehman? Is Josh Okogie? Like, how valuable are those kickouts even? So that's why it's this whole calculation, but it's something.
Who do you think is going to be the best non-Carl? And so if Carl is there, other than Robert Covington, who's the best guy to throw it to kick out for a three?
You know who I'm changing my tune on a little bit is Lehman. I think he's going to, at least in the preseason, he is taking contested threes, like or more contested. He's not just being an open catch and shoot 3-point guy. Like, he's going to get them up. I think that might like lower his percentage some.
Sure.
But if we're talking about guys to just make them, like he's up there. And you know, and if it is just catch and shoot situations, like, people won't like to hear this, but I think Andrew Wiggins is one of the better options on this roster. That maybe just speaks to
them. I would say that Andrew's the next best option after Robert.
He might be.
Right now, that's because I would love to see Jake Lehman be able to just let it fly and be great from three.
Well,
but I think that he's improving. I don't think that he's going to be suddenly a 38% shooter from deep.
Right. Well, and here's the difference between Jake Lehman and Andrew Wiggins. If now it's on a skip pass and you're running out to close out to Jake Lehman, like, he's not going to do that much too off the dribble to, like, get to the rim. He just doesn't have that type of wiggle, right? Whereas Wiggins does. You know, when he does get by you and get all the way to the rim, like, that's a dynamic. It's a dynamic offensive weapon.
Yeah, no one questions that about Andrew. He just doesn't necessarily do it often enough. No, everyone knows he can do these things.
I'm just saying that's a more valuable kickout because it has that.
Sure.
Then I think
that makes sense.
Lehman's going to go, okay, you run me off. Like, maybe I'll let it blow by. I'll reset for another three. Otherwise, I'm taking the contested three or I'm swinging it to somebody else. Whereas Wiggins can do more in those skip pass catch situations.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense there.
Do you think that they're going to like get to a point where like, wow, we're not making any threes this game, or we haven't made any threes this week really, and now we need to put Jalen Noel in the rotation just because he is our best practice shooter? Like, will they become willing to admit they're starving for threes so much as to prioritize that in the rotation?
I think that with the rotation being fluid, at least as I think it's going to be right now, that's a possibility. Like, and they've shown us nothing in terms of what I think the rotation might look like, especially, and part of that is probably because Jordan Bell had that calf injury and they didn't play him until the final 7 or 8 minutes against Indiana. But I do think that, you know, if it's not going well, and I suspect there are going to be plenty of nights like that, there are going to be some rough nights watching this team, just in terms of when they're not on and they're shooting 40-plus threes, it's not going to be pretty to watch. At that point, I don't think they have anything to lose with it. Yeah, toss him in there and see what he can do. This is going to be a year that's, I think, a learning year for a lot of people, and why not see what your second-round pick can do? You drafted him in part because he could shoot from deep in college. Yeah. He showed he could do that. Now, it doesn't always translate, but find out.
Right. And there's other sort of options, too, where you can get a little bit more creative. You can start playing Napier at the two, right? Like, because he's another one of your better shooters from that bench unit to try. There's ways they can inject a little bit of shooting into the group.
I haven't always had the most reliable ways to watch the preseason game. So if this has happened, I don't know it has, but have Jeff Teague and Napier played together?
Yeah,
I
have.
What they game played, did they play in? Because I don't, I can't Golden put State. It in my mind when they did.
I think it was the Golden State game. I remember I tweeted it.
Because that's something I would like to see a little more of. That we,
yeah.
And even if it was in Golden State, which I believe you, the fact that it's only happened then, because I certainly don't remember, right. It didn't happen at home.
I think it's going to happen for sure. Like, Napier has shown he can do that despite being, I mean, he said this a million times, he did it in Brooklyn. It was D'Angelo Russell's best two-man pairing was with him. Mm-hmm. The year before when he was in Portland, he played alongside not only Lillard, but also Lillard and McCollum. He was kind of like the three almost
there. Which is the smallest three in the history of the NBA.
Exactly. But he has done that and not only got by, his team's had a ton of success.
Yeah.
In doing it in those, I mean, it's not, it's like a 500-minute sample from like those 2 years, like on average, whatever.
Which isn't that small.
No, it's not that small. It's just, but I've written it in a couple different things and people are like, okay, well, why didn't they do it more? You know, why, particularly for Portland, it was like, Lillard and McCollum pairing was like plus 12, which is, sure. You know, ridiculous. So it's like, why didn't they do it more? Well, it's more like a package you like add in. I don't, it can't really be the mainstay.
Yeah.
If it was,
it can't
mainstay,
be your
it
identity.
Would be punished. Yeah. Like, I don't, I always use the example of like the Wildcat in football, which
yeah.
actually
or,
doesn't work, you know,
or,
like
or the opposite of a goal line package,
sure.
Because these guys are small. So
exactly.
it's definitely not a goal line package, but you get the gist of what we're getting at.
Bottom of the line, I think it's going to happen. And I think what will make that happen is they're going to want more shooting because not only Napier, but like Teague too, just
yeah.
from a catch and shoot 3-point like standpoint. I think he's going to come in as one, a better shooter than for sure. Like Okogie. I mean, I don't know about Graham. That's a question mark, 3-point shooting wise. Like, I don't know. They're going to need to find shooting at some point, and they're going to probably get creative in how they inject that into the rotation.
I will say this. I think Jeff Teague is going to have a good year. I think that, I don't want to say people wrote him off, but he had a year that was just not who Jeff Teague is last year, and I think that that's going to change this year. He's going to be, if they do have success, I think Jeff Teague would be a big reason as to why.
I think I agree with you. I just think it's worth noting. He's done nothing to impress me in the preseason.
Sure.
That's it. He's a 31-year-old.
What does he need the preseason for? Exactly. Like you and I.
I know. I'm just, I agree with you, and I think there's going to, because particularly when Jimmy missed like the 22 games right before the playoffs of the playoff year.
Yeah.
And it was like Teague in that run when there was less, you know, he moved up the like shooting hierarchy, pecking order.
Sure.
Like he could take that on. And he did that in other games over the course of, you know, over the course of his career here in Minnesota where, oh, there's a bigger opportunity for me. He's taken. He's
I mean,
taken
it,
that upon
it
himself
like,
and done something with it.
It felt like he had one opportunity last year, or he did it once last year. I forget what game, but he had like a 27-point game
yeah.
last year where you're like, okay, Jeff Teague can do that. And I'm not saying we're going to see that Jeff Teague all the time, but I think we see that version of him
but,
a little
but
bit more.
But the point is he's higher in the pecking order just inherently this year.
Yes.
So theoretically, if he's the same player he was 2 years ago, then, I mean, I think you do see at least a couple of those games, particularly if a team is doing everything it possibly can to take Cat away.
I think he could be a big key to this offense. And I'm also curious how fast he's going to want to play because he's brought up wanting to play fast and that maybe he didn't always want to do what they've done under old regimes. But also when he talked about it last week, he didn't exactly seem like the most excited guy in the world.
Yeah, I think he believes in, I mean, I feel like I know this. I feel like he believes in the notion of, as fast as we possibly can, let's get into the half court.
Yeah.
Like he wants to have that hit ahead pass every single time. And just to see, is it there? Do we have a 2-on-1 that's presented itself? Like, cause if we should take that. So he's in that way, he's fast, but then he believes that once you get into the half court and the defense has transitioned and now you're playing 5-on-5, there isn't a need to rush a shot at the 15-second mark on the shot clock, mm-hmm. right? Like, there is value in prodding more. Now, has Teague prodded too much? Historically, yes, definitely.
But there have been times.
But I mean, I think there could be a better balance there than maybe, you know, we think. And I do think that the Jeff Teague likes to play slow label is unfair.
I agree. I think that Jeff Teague is obedient of what coaches have wanted him to do. And Jeff Teague is not necessarily always agreed with that because mm-hmm. he's voiced displeasure.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, he has performed in the way that
right.
has been asked of him.
Right. Yeah. So I think he'll oblige by whatever it is. And what it is, what they're telling him to do, is play faster.
Yeah.
Like, let's get it up into the half court and let's get it swinging. Like, I think you'll see it. And then there will be the times where he's overly passive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just in his nature. And I would be shocked if he sheds that.
Yeah. All right. So this is the last time that you and I are going to talk before the regular season starts on a podcast,
it's
right?
Here.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk yeah. plenty before then ourselves, but not with microphones in front of us. So I want to get your gauge a little bit on what your expectations for this team are. Kind of like a, not a best case, worst case scenario, but maybe a most likely. What are you expecting out of the 2019-2020 Minnesota Timberwolves?
I think from, you know, as much as I'm around you and Jace and Chris and John and Brett, like, you know, the Wolves beat guys, like, my sense is I'm the most optimistic of the group.
Okay.
As far as win total goes.
I think I would probably agree there. And I'm probably on the more pessimistic side of the group
yeah.
as far as win total goes.
And I don't, it's, if we call it the 35 and a half, what it is. I think I'm over it, not by a lot, and I think you're under it by not by a lot, but that's, I don't know, I think that's the line in the sand. I just think, we spent a bunch of time talking about Sacramento and stuff last year. It's largely a product of me believing that at least offensively, this does so much for Cat this year.
Yeah.
And if I'm anticipating him obviously being healthy for the majority of the year and the system elevating him.
Well,
and I think that just
if something happens to him, then everyone's going to look like
yeah.
if there's an
totally.
Injury to Carl, everyone's going to be wrong about their prediction, no
totally.
Matter how good or bad you thought they were going to be. They're going to be worse because he is their team.
So Krasinski wrote today a best case, worst case, middle case
yes.
scenario. And I'm curious what you think the best case, he, the way he phrased it, in a perfect world. And he said 45 wins.
Yes. I think that's a little much for me in a perfect
Isn't
world.
Isn't that crazy, though? Like, in a perfect world, because 45 wins maybe probably doesn't even get
oh,
you in the
no,
playoffs.
I don't think it does.
Like, he compared it to, remember, I think Phoenix was like 2016-17 or 15-16 when they won 48 games and didn't make the playoffs. Like,
yes.
So
I think the West is going to look like somewhat like that this year where you
right.
miss the playoffs. You can be that good and miss the playoffs.
It's just crazy
New Orleans,
that a perfect world, and you have Karl Anthony Towns, who in this perfect world probably is getting MVP votes, and you're still not a playoff team. I don't even disagree with that. I'm just saying that's crazy.
I think that New Orleans could win 45 games and miss the playoffs by two or three games. It would not surprise me.
But this is my general stance on the West is it's not going to be all eight. It looks like this glass ceiling that sits right below the San Antonio's and Portland's. There, we know this. We do this every single year. We go locks, 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 this and this and this. It chaos.
Yep.
It's chaos. There's 82. Every team has to play 82 games, 48 minutes a game. Weird stuff happens. Like, stuff could break in ways where New Orleans, even if it is 45 wins, they still make it over San Antonio because San Antonio only wins 42 or something. Like, I recognize the West is awesome. I just think we're over believing that it's locked. These eight guys are in.
I don't think that there's in. I don't know if I've said this on podcast or off podcast. You, I've got five teams that are locks right now in the
yeah.
West, and
we
then,
did. I said six.
Yeah, because yeah. you and
I
the
Golden
difference
State.
Is Golden State, and yeah. then I think we both have probably Golden State, San Antonio, Portland, or you. Yeah. You have Portland, San Antonio in that.
Mm-hmm.
That they're 7 and 8 right now, but who
question
knows?
Marks,
yeah, the question marks, and then the other tiers that mm-hmm. that are what they are, but I can't see this team getting up that high.
Right.
That's the 45 wins that John put for his best case is a little much for me.
So what would you say, like 42?
Yeah, 42 is probably like a couple games above 500 is the best case scenario. I will say
I don't think so. I think it's higher. I do.
What do you think it is?
I think, and I was reading that on my way over here, and I was like, yeah, like if we're talking about a perfect world, you know, within reason, that could happen. It does happen. It has happened before. We've seen teams completely shift the way they play and empower an individual stud, and that just in the aggregate makes a difference. It very well could be 45 wins. I don't think 45 gets you in, but it could. Like
it could, of course. I mean, anything above 500 could get you in today's NBA. Yeah. It's awfully difficult for me to wrap my head around a scenario in which anything above 500 gets you in the West this year.
Yeah, yeah. It's the West. It's something else this year. But things, I don't know. Things always happen. That's all I'm gonna say. Is like, remember this when we were like, we got eight in for sure, and then it's, you know, the Pelicans don't really have a shot because there are a couple even out of play. Like, I don't know, man. Stuff happens.
It'll be interesting. I think for my most likely situation, I think I'm undecided on the number of games. I'm bouncing between 32 and 33 wins. Like, that's where I think this team is right now.
That's pretty noticeably different than mine. I'm like 36, 37.
Yeah, which, I mean, it doesn't sound all that like a big difference, but
it is. Kind of when we're like expected valuing it out, you know, like that's...
Yeah, I'm firmly on the under. If we're going out to Vegas, I'm firmly on the under for this team.
That's just because if you had to nail that down to a few reasons, I mean, what is it? It's just not believing in the surrounding pieces.
I don't think that they have enough shooting on this team.
Okay.
I don't know that. I think that they're going to play really fast, and I think that, like you said, and I completely agree, it's going to hurt their defense. I don't think this is going to be a good defensive team. I think the West is that good where they're going to have a lot of nights where they might show up and they might play really well and they might get beat. Right. Like, I think that there are a lot of nights that could be on the horizon for them in that case. But
I don't know how to quantify being a bad shooting team from three. You know, if you're doing it on volume, how much that takes away from your win total.
Yeah, it's a good question because I don't have an answer.
Because
for
I think
it.
what you're saying is that's like two or three wins over the course of the year, right?
Yeah,
and
I mean there are going to be a few nights this season I think where they shoot 45 threes and make seven or eight of them.
Yeah,
and you can't win a game like that.
But here's the thing, though: on the other side, even if they're bad, even if they have the 27th best shooters in the league, you know, they shoot whatever that is. Even then, there's going to be a couple games where you do shoot 40, you shoot 44 of them and you make 20.
Absolutely.
And then those are wins. Yeah. Like, if it is that volume, it swings both ways. And I guess what I'm saying is it's this pendulum, right, where it's going to swing both ways. It's just that cat moves to the left, right?
Sure.
And so the swinging, I don't know. Like,
I just think that there are more games of the former in terms of they're going to miss a lot of threes than you're going to run into games. There are going to be six or seven games this year where they're going to be hot from three, and they're just going to look unbeatable.
I just see, for me, is I would hear the argument of, so what we're saying, where you and I are four wins different.
Sure.
I think a stronger argument could be made that their defense is trash. That's what does it more than the threes.
I have a concern about that too.
Right. Well, I'm just saying if I'm ranking concerns, it's that over being a bad 3-point shooting team.
Because I think
just by shooting the threes, you're inherently an externality of that is you're helping your offense, right? In spacing, particularly for Cat, like fewer shot clock violations, fewer turnovers. I mean, it's just less of a risky offensive possession, right? And I don't see it being, it's detrimental for sure.
Yeah.
If you have bad shooters and you shouldn't know how to face, it's detrimental. Like, I hear that.
Of course. I mean, any team ever, yes.
But I don't think it's as detrimental as I think this defense potentially could be, specifically in the non-cat minutes.
The non-cap minutes are terrifying. That's something I'm writing about for tomorrow. It's going to be my column tomorrow.
I'm interested. That is
just what they're going, and there are no numbers to back it up from preseason. But it's a terrifying.
But those
scenario.
Are the best columns. Those are the best columns because then you have to. I mean, you have to estimate. You have to estimate what it's going to be, and it's hard for me to make any sort of positive estimation of how this team does anything well.
Yeah.
When Cat's on the floor, particularly defensively. And I've said this before, it's like, if you're about to go run out Noah Vonleh at the five and Trevion Graham at the four a bunch, I don't know, man. You're going to get whacked.
Well, and this is what I'm not finished with what I'm writing, but like part of it is Carl's never been known as a good defensive player in the NBA. He was known as that in Kentucky a little bit, but he's not been known as that in the NBA. But he has the one thing that no one else on this team really has, and that's size, because they're not, for the guys that I think are going to be in the rotation, they don't have anyone that can replicate anything he does at that end, just because no one is close to his size.
You know what's going
to
be stupid? I'm calling this going to be a really stupid take that's going to be out there this year. Even if Kat does not improve as a defender in a vacuum individually.
Like statistically?
Just, no, execution-wise, how good he is as a defender. Even if he's the same defender he was last year, there's going to be this different juxtaposition where there's still the bet. The defense is going to be so much better with that player on the floor versus him off.
Yeah.
And the stupid thing is going to be everyone's going to be like, well, look, the first 4 years of Kat's career, the defense was better with him off the floor than it was on. And it's just disregarding every other variable pretty much.
Like the other players on the floor? The
other players, different coaches, different – I mean, all of that. And it's going to be better with Kat on the floor this year. Easy.
Yeah.
Yet – that doesn't necessarily mean he's individually better. I'm betting he will take another step, not a leap, defensively. But that's going to happen. And that is not the way to measure this, because he's going to play 70% of his minutes with Robert Covington. So that means that the bench isn't going to get as much Robert Covington. And Robert Covington's the best defender. It's like defense is so hard to quantify. You cannot do it exclusively using numbers.
Yeah.
Because the context of the players that are around him and what scheme is being used with those players versus different scheme when other people are, like, I think they're going to play defense differently with Kat as the tent pole. Like, it's not going to be switchy at all. He's dropping. Like, he's dropping. There's not going to be.
I'm curious how switchy it is when.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe.
Because I do think it will be different. It has to be different when you don't have him on the floor, because
the preseason, the way they've defended has been exactly the same as it was under Tibbs. Maybe even more conservative. It's the same with Vonleh on the floor. And so now other people have suggested to me maybe they're hiding the switching thing for the regular season, getting really aggressive switching. I don't know. I doubt
maybe,
that.
Maybe.
I doubt that. Okay, so you got this group who's never really
switched,
played a ton. They've never played together. And even the guys who have been playing like a drop scheme, very conservative style, let's leave the big at the rim type of defense. You're like, well, let's keep this card in our back pocket to drop on Brooklyn game one of like, oh, no, but against Maccabi, they dropped every single one.
Yeah.
Now, Kat switching out onto Kyrie every time? Like, I doubt it.
I think they'll be more switchy than they have been when Carl's not on the floor if Jordan Bell's playing. I think at that point they will try.
Bell 5?
Yes. I think that they'll try and be more switchy then.
I just still think.
Which I don't know how it's going to go.
Bell's at the 5. So you go Bell at the 5 and you go like Graham, Okogie, Culver, Napier, right? Great. Those guys can switch. You know what those guys can't do?
Defend.
Move big people. That team is miniature. That is the small. Jordan Bell's short.
Yeah.
For a center. Very short for a center.
Large for a normal human being. Like he's 6'8", 6'9".
No, not even, dude.
He's large for a human.
Okay, he's large for a human. He's not 6'8", 6'9". Tiny center. Trevion Graham, smallest power forward. Josh Okogie, 6'4", at the 3. Culver, okay, kind of big, long, but pretty much baby
size. I think
size.
You probably have Culver at the 3.
Okay, and, sure. Okogie's a little bit stronger. There. Whatever. It's just, I don't know, man. I just think if they're about to run out small, switchy lineups, you're going to get absolutely eaten by even crappy teams like the Suns.
Yeah, but I think that they're going to run them out at some point.
Yeah,
I think that's what they're going to do.
Noah Vonleh, Gorgui Dieng. That, in my opinion, that has to happen.
We'll see
together,
if it will.
Together.
We have less than a week until real basketball starts.
I know, I can't wait.
Less than a week. Final preseason games tonight between the Wolves and the Bucks, and then they get started in Brooklyn.
How do you think, real quick? Giannis, how they match up there?
It would be a tough night if this game counted, I think. Just because.
But like, so they did like Taj on him in the past, right?
Oh, you're talking like who do they put on him tonight?
Covington?
I would get. Yes, I would. I'm also curious how they cover Brooke Lopez if they're going to bring Carl out.
It's a weird team for them to match up against.
I would guess that Trevion Graham starts tonight.
And you put Trevion on Giannis?
Yeah, I think that's kind of how you would have to. This is it. If they are going to be fluid in the starting lineup, which they've shown in the preseason that in the preseason, in that fifth starter spot has been Jake Layman or Trevion Graham, My guess would be Trevion gets tonight and guards Giannis because he's a better matchup than I think Jake Layman would be defensively. And I'm not saying it's going to go well, but I think that – and I'm also very curious how they cover Brook Lopez.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So then you have to put Cat on Brook Lopez, right?
I would think.
I mean, you can't put him on, like, Chris Middleton.
Nope.
So it's
– they don't match up well against Milwaukee.
They don't match up well.
That much is for sure.
Yeah. That's for sure. I know. I'm excited to watch that game.
Yeah, I'm very curious how it's going to go, but that's Dane Moore. You can find him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. I'm on Twitter at RealDCunningham. We will talk to you next week. Dane will be somewhere, and the Wolves will be playing real basketball, so we'll see you then.